to bring you greetings in Jesus' name. It's a pleasure to meet together and worship. Just so many inspiring things today in the songs and the devotional, the Sunday school. We just go many different ways, and we could go deeper, so much deeper in all of these things. But we're here to hear what God has for us. What can we learn from a Civil War era ship, space shuttle, a man with long hair, and kayaks? Anything? Perhaps. We'll see. So during the Civil War, the North knew that one of the keys to victory was to cut off the lifeblood to the South. And one of the ways they did that was to set up a blockade of naval ships down the East Coast, around the point of Florida, and across the Mediterranean, the Gulf of Mexico, to keep supplies from coming into the South. They cut off supplies so that they could not support their war effort. So in response to this, there was a style of ship built known as blockade runners. They were low and they were fast. They were often steam-powered. Some of the fastest ones had twin paddle wheels on the side. And they would go fast, but a lot of the Union ships were still sailing vessels. So the idea was that you laid low in the water, you snuck in at night, and when you got close to the blockade, you made a run for the port and hopefully get past the Union ships before they noticed you and get supplies into the southern ports. There was a ship known as the Acadia. It was built in Quebec, and it was one of these twin-wheelers. They built the thing, they gave it over to a crew of people, and they told the ship's master, you take this thing south and you can sell it at any price, just sell the thing. And there was a lot of money to be made. It was lucrative business to run supplies in and out of the southern ports. So he headed south, he went to the Bahamas and Cuba, picked up a bunch of supplies. He couldn't find anybody to sell the ship to, so he decided, well, what the world, I'll make a run for it. He'll try it. Never did this before. So out across the Gulf of Mexico he went. Headed for the port of Galveston, Texas. It was a secondary port. Most of the major ports were very well protected. But one night, the fog had settled in. It was dark. And he was making a run for the port. He was probably within 10 miles from the port, and he ran aground. Not a good place to be with enemy warships around. So the crew disembarked the ship, headed for shore, made it out safely. The next morning, the USS Virginia looks out, and they see a blockade runner. So they turn their guns and shelled the thing for 2 hours, and there it sank. Unfortunately, nobody on board. It was really worthless for their time to blow it to pieces. But it sank, and the mast stuck out of the water, and they were actually visible for many, many years until recently, with hurricanes and storms, it finally sank below the surface and no longer found. Makes us think of a verse in 1 Timothy 1:19. Paul's telling Timothy, he's talking about people who lose out. He says, holding faith and a good conscience, which some, having put away concerning faith, have made shipwreck. They did something that created a shipwreck. Let's fast forward about 120 years, the space shuttle program. Some of you will remember this. January 28, 1986, The nation was watching. The Challenger was set to go on a mission to space. This was different because this time it was going to be carrying a civilian school teacher, Krista McAuliffe, I think her name was, something like that. I don't have that written down. But anyway, Reagan's attempt was to try to gain interest in the space program, and he thought, well, we'll get a school teacher. She was a high school teacher. This will fire an interest in the students. This will fire interest in people, and the space program will move forward. The space shuttle program used a lot of reusable parts, and one of the reusable parts was the solid rocket boosters that were on both sides of the space shuttle. They were the largest solid rocket boosters ever built. One of the things about solid rocket fuel is that once you turn it on, you don't turn it off. Once it's lit, it's going, so you have one chance at it, and you strap yourself to it, and you go into space. All the other engines, you could throttle them. The liquid fuel, you can throttle them. You can turn them off and come back. But these things, once they're going, they're gone. And then they jetonize them, they fall into the water, and they reuse them. And one, as the engineers were checking over the booster engines one time, they noticed that there was soot blow by. So these boosters will build in sections. There was 12 foot, when those sections were put together, there was O-rings that were 12 feet in diameter. Now, we're used to little O-rings. We go to Ace Hardware and buy a new one. We just fixed a BB gun the other week. Went to Ace Hardware, got a little O-ring, stuck it back in, and it worked again. Because the old O-ring didn't work anymore. It didn't keep the air from squeezing past. It would just, you could go for 50 pumps and it would go plop. So we got a new one. So they're looking at these rocket boosters and say, wait a minute, there's a little bit of soot coming past these O-rings. Now think of it, it's inside, this is rocket fuel. It's supposed to stay inside and go out the back end. This was coming outside a little bit. So the engineer's like, what in the world's going on? And the only thing they could figure out is that most of the, or all of the launches so far in the space shuttle program had happened in about 50-degree weather. And this one particular time, the temperature had went down below freezing. And they're like, just could be that, those O-rings got cold and were failing, were keep that past. But they had no proof. But they send a memo anyway to NASA headquarters and say, listen, we noticed this. We're not sure why it's happening. We think it might be because of the cold temperatures, but we don't know. Well, the NASA top brass is like, okay, everybody's ready to go to space. We got this school teacher that wants to go. Those guys aren't even sure they know what they're talking about. Let's do it. The 3 nights before that launch, the temperature went down below freezing every single night. 73 seconds into the space shuttle launch, the pilot said, uh-oh, and that was the last they heard of them. And you all know what happened, at least most of you that are a little older. You probably remember hearing that in the news, seeing it perhaps. The O-rings failed. The heat came out the side, compromised where the rocket booster was fastened to the external fuel tank. The booster started to move around, knocked a hole in this, and soon the whole thing blew to pieces. Hebrews 3:12, take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. Open your Bibles to Judges chapter 16. Now we'll talk about the man with long hair. You all know who this is by now, probably. Well, possibly. I guess there was, in Judges there was one, but there was also one in 1 Samuel, was there another man with long hair? What we're going to talk about here is Samson. The other one was Absalom. He had long hair, and his hair got caught up in that tree as he went running underneath. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the story of Samson. We could read the whole story. It's in Judges 13 to 16. And we could go for a long time trying to figure out what Samson did wrong. And I don't know exactly what all he did wrong, because we can look at Samson and we say, well, he went down, he messed with dead things, he shouldn't have, he was a Nazarite. But then how would he judge Israel and bring Philistines into subjection if he wasn't allowed to kill people or come in contact with dead bodies? And there's a lot of those questions that swirl around. It's interesting, in chapter 13, when the angel first of all comes to Manoah's wife, he tells her that she's not supposed to drink strong drink or eat any unclean thing. And the son, he's going to be a Nazarite, and he shall not take a razor to his head. That's the only thing it tells him. And I don't know. Normally, the Nazarite vow also included not touching dead bodies. But this was never mentioned here. So what was Samson's problem? Was it the problem that he actually went to the Philistines? Was it that he occasionally dealt with dead things? You know, he killed that lion by his hands, walking down there. Saw a video clip the other day where, I guess, some game wardens or something were trying to get to a mountain lion. This thing was charging and jumping over him into the passed him onto the rocks and back and forth. Samson just grabbed him, tore him up, threw him to the side. And then he's going to his wedding to a Philistine woman later on, and he stops and looks, and there's honey. So he dips in, eats the honey, and keeps going. Is that where Samson went wrong? The Bible doesn't actually tell us. You know, we can look at stories of Samson and surmise a lot of things. But I'm simply going to go towards the end of the story in chapter 16. I'm going to read a few verses here. You know, there's a couple other things that happened. They kept trying to figure out the secret to his strength. And there was that time his first wife said, tell me. And he put the riddle out there, and she's like, tell me the riddle. And he finally did. And then he owed them whatever he had put there. And he went and killed 30 men and stole their clothes and delivered what he was owed them. You know, the story of him catching all the foxes and setting the wheat fields on fire. And then he meets Delilah. Doesn't bother with marriage this time. He just says he loved her. He spent time with her. And they talked and they got deep and they got down into their personal things. He says, tell me the story of your strength, what the source of it. Why are you so strong? He said, well, try this. And they would wrap him up, and he'd, boom, bust him and go out and kill a bunch of men. And he's like, stop messing with me. Tell me what it is. Well, let's try this kind of rope. And we say, well, he was playing with sin. Possibly. Yeah, he was getting close. But God had a purpose for him. In fact, when he went down there and he loved that first woman, the Bible tells us that his parents didn't know that it was of the Lord. And we look at that and say, how is God working here? And another time, he crawled out to God. He said, I'm thirsty. And he was holding this jawbone, this dead bone. And God provided water out of it. And he drank it out. He's like, how is he messing with fire and God's blessing? And we can't put that story together. But there's one thing we do know. So let's start reading at chapter 16 and verse 15. And she said unto him, how canst thou say, I love thee, when thine heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these three times, and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. And it came to pass, when she pressed him daily with her words, and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death, that he told her all his heart. And he said unto her, there hath not come a razor upon mine head, for I have been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I will become weak and be like any other man. And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up this once, for he hath shown me all his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came upon her and brought money in their hand. And she made him sleep upon her knees, and she called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head. And she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. And she said, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he awoke out of his sleep, and he said, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. And we know the rest of the story. They put him in prison, and they made him grind grain. And this Bible tells us that his hair began to grow, and it got to that place, that time where they were having a feast to their gods, and said, bring out Samson that we can make fun of him. They brought him out, and they called for him. And they were mocking, and Samson went to those pillars, and he prayed to God. He said, give me one more chance. And it clearly tells us his hair had grown, and there was this connection between his hair growing and his strength. And then he collapsed that building and killed more people in that time than he killed all throughout his lifetime. One little thing. What's the matter with cutting my hair? But it was the thing that took him down. Was he gradually going down? God knows that whole story. But when he did the one thing he was committed not to do, the Bible tells us the spirit left him. God departed from him. And it's intriguing as you think about that story that Samson was intrigued with something in the very thing that he was fighting against. Okay? So God rose up raised up Samson specifically to fight the Philistines. That was the whole purpose of God bringing Samson into the world. He said, I'm going to use Samson to deliver Israel out of bondage from the Philistines. That was Samson's job. And so he was doing his work, but within that work, there was one thing. Like, oh, that's interesting. And it happened to be women. There's several of them. And I thought about that, you know, as we fight the fight. We fight against the world. We fight against our flesh. But within those things, there's those little things that we... Oh, it's kind of like Achan. They went to Jericho to destroy the city. And he's in the middle of that work. And he's like, oh, that's interesting. It takes us down. The title of the message is The Peril of Personal Spiritual Neglect. It's a little bit wordy. The Peril of Personal Spiritual Neglect. The word peril simply means a place of imminent danger. Now, we talked in Sunday school about death and how we try to avert it. When we see it coming down the river, let's do something. Call 911. Okay, you want to get away from that place. Okay, we're going back away. And we tend to do that in life with danger. You know, we see our children starting to do something. The little child goes for the wood stove and we reach out and pull it back because we know that he doesn't know that if he touches it, it'll burn his hand. Tender hand. We hold our breath when our 16-year-old gets in the car and goes down the road the first time all by herself. It's just like, okay. But we love danger, right? Especially on this side. Where do the kayaks come in? Well, sometimes it's not so dangerous, but it's just kind of like, what could be? So a couple weeks ago, Janelle's family was at a cabin. It's called the Mill, I think is what they call it out close to Louisville. The cabin itself was in an old mill master's house, and then there is an old mill right by the creek. There's a big mill, and there's a large dam. So picture the mill over on this side, and they have this dam that's probably 100, 150 feet wide. And it's a concrete dam, and it's about 12 feet high. And the water just runs over the top, not real high, just kind of just nice and peaceful there down the other side, and it's a big pool, and then it narrows into a creek and flows away. At the bottom, the cement comes down, and then there's like a cement shelf, a concrete shelf that sticks out maybe 3 feet. Okay. So we took kayaks along. There's a little motorboat, a little boat there with a trolley motor. You can up behind, there's the creek travels back through. You can go fishing, caught a bunch of bass and stuff. Lots of fun. It's interesting to me. One morning I went out up the creek and turned around, coming back through, and there's a sign that says, danger, dam, 100, no, it doesn't say how far it is, but it says, danger, dam ahead, stay back 150 feet. And I smiled because where you put the boats in and out is, if this is the dam here, it comes back and there's like a little opening that just goes right out to the driveway, and you just take your boats right there and in and you out, and we just paddle right up across next to the dam. In fact, one of my nephews, he's about 10, him and his mom were out in the kayaks, and they were coming in, and the water flows slowly. But he got a little too close to the dam, and she told him, hey, watch it, you know, back up. And he panicked, had the spirit of fear, but not of a sound mind, and starts paddling the wrong direction. And he's getting closer, and he says, well, the only thing left is to bail. So he blew out. I actually saw it. I was down on the other side of the dam. He's out, and I'm looking, and he's standing there. So here the silt comes up behind that dam. It's only a foot or two. So part of it's like, well, that could, well, not, well, it probably wouldn't have went over. The water wasn't deep enough. The kayak would have scraped and stopped. But perhaps if he just slipped and fell down, you know, the concrete ledge, so it could have been dangerous, okay? But we paid no attention to the danger that was there because we were in and out with boats the whole time. We play with danger. We get close, right? In fact, some of them later took their kayaks up in to see if you could actually go. Okay, you try it out. No, the water's not deep enough. Another thing that happened with the kayak, so way back when I bought these things, I discovered there's a little hole at the back of the kayak on the top, a little rubber plug. That way, if you get water in the kayak, you just pull that plug, turn it right side, turn it up on end, and water runs out. And somewhere along the line, I realized one is missing. I'm like, well, it's probably not a big deal. It's on the top of the kayak. So one morning, I went out fishing. My brother-in-law, he comes out through. He's not a fisherman, but he's bigger than me. He's a big man. I'm not paying much attention. I fish. He keeps going up beyond me, and I'm fishing along, and he's coming back toward me, and he starts hollering. He's like, hey, he's like, this thing's taking on water. Okay. Well, get out. What are you supposed to do? So he over to shore and up the muddy bank, and whoo, of course, he's half wet because water has been coming in. The only thing we can figure out is that if that kayak goes low enough in the water goes in the hole, right? Is a little plug important? Well, yeah. So we put ourselves in uncomfortable situations, unhandy, close to unhandy situations, close to potentially dangerous. In fact, we put ourselves in dangerous situations. The people in the space shuttle put themselves on top of two rockets that were fairly uncontrollable with the attempt to get into space. The men in the blockade runner saw the money and said, yeah, let's try it. Young men climb hills, hang from cranes, drive fast. Old men drive fast. I don't know what ladies do that are dangerous. But now I want us to start thinking about something, the peril of personal spiritual neglect. We have this hard time separating between the physical and the spiritual. And I want to be understood when I say this, and I'm not saying this in a critical way, but a Sunday or two ago, there was mention about, there was kind of this comparison made about sitting here and sitting on the streets of New York City. And I understand that. But I think sometimes we get misled into thinking that somehow being here in the air conditioning, nice clothing and everything is kind of, we made it. And we're floating down the river in the kayak, and the plug isn't in. And we forget that it's more than the material. There's this spirit, like, what's happening in here? What's happening with my spiritual interests? What's happening with my spiritual life? And it's very possible we are middle upper class, right? And it's comfortable, it's fun, and it's enjoyable, and there's just so much to enjoy. God, and that's okay. God has given us all things to enjoy. Paul says he knows both how to abound and to suffer need. Many of us really have no choice in where we're at right now. We make choices in life, but in reality, so much of it has already been set up, and our life has been stacked, and here the lines have fallen in pleasant places. We can do all right in the flesh. And sometimes that just grows really big in our mind. David had that problem. He said, I look around at the prosperity of the wicked and said, nothing happened. Like, even in death, there was no bands in their death. Like, it almost appeared like even when we get to that point we talked about in Sunday school, where it's just, you have the celebration and you go on. We notice that we're actually doing all right without God. We're actually doing okay without reading the Bible every day. The ship was running fine. We're just almost at the port. The space shuttle was ready to launch, and we took off, and it was a beautiful launch. It was a clear blue sky day. The river's peaceful, and we're kayaking. We're 20 feet away from the dam, and it's okay. But have we taken care of the spiritual part? We need to stay connected spiritually with God. Just a couple lessons to learn from each of those stories. I already talked to turn to 1 Timothy 1:19. Just want you to see that verse. Timothy was a young church leader. Paul is exhorting him. And he's telling him in verse 18 to war a good warfare. You're going into dangerous territory. He tells him in 2 Timothy chapter 3, there he says, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come." And often we think about, well, the last days, that's probably about 3 years right before Jesus comes back, right? Possibly so, but I want to remind us that the Bible talks about the last days as the whole time when Jesus came to the end. There at Pentecost, Peter talked about how Joel said, "In the last days I will pour out my spirit." And he said, "This is happening right now." Okay, it started back there. I know we look at our culture and we say, "Wow, it's really getting worse. It must be close." But the fact is, of all that stuff, you can read there in 2 Timothy, there's 19 things, 19 characteristics of perilous times that, and perilous people. And that's been true ever since Jesus has gone back to the throne. We live in dangerous times. And he says, holding faith. This is how you're going to do it. Hold faith and a good conscience, which some, having put away concerning faith, have made shipwreck. A conscience. What is a conscience? It's just that thing where it says, "I don't feel comfortable doing that." We don't always know exactly the words. It's just that I've been taught better than that, and we have a choice. And I don't care how old we are, we come up to head with it, and we say, there's a line. Our conscience draws a line and says, "Well, I don't, can't go there." And then it comes around again, and you're like, "Maybe I could." And maybe you do it, and it's like, "Oh, it didn't. That was actually okay." We kind of chip away at that. In that ship, I guess no one knows exactly what all went on. It's lost in history when that ship ran aground. But one of the two things that rise to the top, one was incompetence. The fellow didn't quite know what he was doing. And the second one is they're not sure the compass was working right. So in the ships, they have what's called a binnacle, which is this post close to the wheel, the rudder wheel, and in that they mount the compass. And one of the things that they needed to take into account is that pieces of iron and metal could mess up with the compass. So when they built this binnacle, it's called, if there were iron nails too close, it could mess with the headings of the compass. In fact, when they started building iron ships, they really had a problem because all the metal in the ship could tend to mess with it as well. So they had to take precautions to make sure the compass was reading right. Something as small as a nail could throw it off. So there's our conscience. Built upon the things that we learned through the years, the things we've been taught. And then there's iron nails. What could it be? Teachings, podcasts, pleasures, you name it. Anything that takes our conscience and like, what is it, 10 degrees, 15 degrees, where are we headed here? False teachers. Sometimes it's little things. I'm just being honest, you know, I enjoy a comedian now and again. The other day I was listening to one. A Christian one. I'll see what she says. It was a lady. And she starts joking about how her grandmother was very conservative, Wesleyan perhaps. She's talking about how she wears jewelry, and girls nowadays wear jewelry, and she's like, you got to make sure you wear the right kind that you can quick slip off so you can, when the trumpet blows, you quick slip it off so you can go up. Turn it off. You know, and we can be misled and, and we go on to the next funny thing. It's a nail beside the compass. And we have access to all these things. I don't think I'm odd that podcasts, videos, YouTube, whatever, it's there. And it's like, well, I don't know. You know, we're up against the dam and the water's peaceful and the kayak ride is great and we're going to space again. Holding faith and a good conscience. Protecting that compass. Removing things away from it that are going to mess with the headings. Our world is full of antichrists. So-called Christian. You know, and the pressure is mounting to sleep. We're just all Christians. It's all great. We have to go back to the truth. Hebrews 12:1 tells us to lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. One of the things, there was an incident with these blockade runners where there was a ship coming in and one of the Union ships saw it and they started to chase. And they were about together. They could tell the distance and they were right. They could hang in long enough, they might catch them until they saw the blockade runner starting to throw bales of cotton over the edge. One by one, bales of cotton were being thrown. And the blockade runner just slowly but surely pulled away. And the Union ship turned around. There's no point. Throwing away weights. And the Bible tells us to do that in a positive way. Like, see, there's things in our life, you know what? We don't need it. Just let it go. I mean, look at it and say, what's the big deal? It's like just cutting my hair. Maybe. The Challenger disaster. We don't have time to read Hebrews 3, 12 to 19. It tells there, beware lest in any of you an evil heart of unbelief. Like, well, you can't prove it that that's what is happening to the O-rings, and there's just not enough evidence, and well, let's just try it. And ends in disaster. Unbelief. Is it really important? I don't know. Unbelief has this whole thing, too, where spills out into what we do. I like to theorize about it. I like to talk about it, but I'm not sure we're quite ready to commit it and do it. Samson. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. Satan is walking around looking. If you think about study lions, what do? They crouch in the grass by the water holes and they look. They watch for weak ones. They watch for young ones. They watch for ones who start meandering away from the rest of the herd. They go after them. Everything was looking good for Samson till that one thing he let go. And Delilah went for it. We found it. There it is. It's his hair. Cut it off. Bam, we got him. Satan's watching us. What's that one thing? What's his one weakness? Oh, it's that. Oh, here, let's feed him some more. Feed him a little more. And we don't know what's happening. The water's dribbling in the hole in the back of the canoe. It's kayak behind us. We don't see it happening until all of a sudden their leg's wet. Whoa. By that time, it's down in the water and it's pouring in. Okay. Be sober. Be vigilant. Pay attention. Turn to John chapter 15, verse 4 and 5. This is the Jesus teaching on the vine. What do we do with these perils? I've said that we live beside danger, and that's true. Jesus said, when in his high priestly prayer, he says, God, I don't pray that you take them out of the world, but I pray that you keep them from the evil that's in the world. We live among the world. We have to. We cannot isolate ourselves. We could go off in this little community and just live and have everything just so, but we still wouldn't get away from it because we still live with our carnal flesh. So we're faced with dangers. We live right up against it. We drive down the road 60 miles an hour and pass each other, okay? We live on the edge. We get used to it. But we have to manage it correctly. We have to have something deeper within us that's going to hold us in the perilous times. And that one thing is simply our connection with God and with Jesus Christ. Chapter 15, verse 4. Abide in me and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit of itself except it abide in the vine. No more can ye except ye abide in me. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing. Jesus talked also that those that believed in him, the Father and him would come in and would be with him. Relationship, a connection. So how do we keep a connection? It sounds like maybe oversimplified, so just keep a connection with God and with Christ and you'd be fine. Exactly. Right? It's not really that hard. Or is it? How do we stay connected? How do we stay to the branch? The Apostle Paul talks about our relationship with Christ and the relationship with Christ and the church as a marriage relationship. And I think about that. So think about you and the Lord as a marriage relationship, those of you that are married. How do you stay connected? You just talk, right? You do things together. You talk. You love each other. We're talking in Sunday school about God asked, or us trying to figure out what we should do. Like, should we get a yellow car? When you buy your wife a gift, I suppose you can do this, is make sure, check with her, make sure you get exactly what she wants. But you know, there's something strengthening about just simply doing something for her that she's not asking for, right? Or vice versa. Because it shows that, oh, they love them. When we do something, when we just go out and sit, look at everything and say, I think God would want me to do this, and so we do it for God, that's loving God. God doesn't want to just put a list of rules and we go down and check them. He wants us to, like, okay, how can I connect with God? And we talk. And we love. It means we just pray. We think about God through the day. And read his Bible. Read his word. It's not hard. It's staying connected. We keep our conscience. We treasure it. We say, I don't know if I can do that. It's just good. I know it's a simple, dumb little thing, but you know, I've been taught that, and it's like we have to decide where we can go against that and still survive. We need to think seriously about what we do with the things we've been taught. Sure, we need to question, we need to analyze, say, is this. This is the final guide. God's word is the final guide. Truth is the final guide. But we need to be careful we don't disdain and react too quickly. So first of all, connect like we do in a marriage relationship. Talk and serve. Keep your conscience. Number three, we need to eat well. So the other evening, there was a tractor pull at Schaeferstown, and they were having classic tractors, which is 1966 to 1989. And that's the kind of year, that's the years of tractors that we grew up with. And I knew that there would probably be Massey 1130s pulling. And so we went just to kind of see that. And there's something about hearing the Perkins diesel go at full throttle again, and just, you know, you just want to go chisel plow again. Not so much, yeah, I mean, there's, so you could say, well, should you go to a tractor pull? Well, okay, maybe we shouldn't. But it was interesting. Something happened there, so we were just time to start. And there was a problem with the piece of equipment. So we sat there, and it was hot. You know what Friday was like? It was hot. And we waited, and they had the doors open, and they were working, and we don't know what was wrong, but we waited. We waited. And finally, well, the hydraulic pump went. So they have a new one. They're going to take the old one out, put the new one in. So we waited some more. And it took them an hour and a half. And my brother leans over to me. He's like, you think all these people would wait this long for a sermon? I said, I don't think so. I thought about getting up here and just standing here and see how long y'all would wait for a sermon. It doesn't make me any better than y'all. But I thought about that as I was sitting there. I was like, we have to have air conditioning for sure in church because, well, you can't worship in that kind of heat. Listen, I know one thing. If you drink two sodas and three candy bars at 4:30 and supper's at 5:30, you're not very hungry. We eat spiritually. It could be YouTube, it could be music, it could be podcasts, it could be books, could be boating, it could be kayaking, it could be fishing, it could be gardening, it could be... We're eating spiritually. We feed ourselves, we want things, right? If I'm not hungry spiritually, then I've been eating something else. That's as simple as that. And if we don't eat spiritually, then we're not going to stay connected. That's just the plain truth, and it's so sobering because there was that group of people that came up to God at the judgment day, and they said, haven't we done this and this in thy name and cast out and this and that? And Jesus looks at him and says, I don't know you. There was no relationship there. We didn't talk. You didn't have time for me. You didn't want me. And they thought they were right the whole time. The peril of personal spiritual neglect. And it's such, I guess what's so sobering to me is it's such little things, like that little plug. Space shuttle has 2.5 million parts, I think they say. One of them didn't work. I love listening to music, but I have to ask myself, okay, like, so I listen to music for half an hour, like, did I connect spiritually? If I didn't, sure, I might have had a good day, but in the background, God's like, I don't know you. It's sobering and challenging. Because it's more than meets the eye. We see the things that, there's so much that meets the eye right off. It's the quiet things in the back corner that are going to make the eternal difference. Let's pray.